Hello and welcome to All Things Apostolic. My name is Casey Sees.
And I'm Brian Williams.
And today we're going to discuss
Essentials for Church Planting.
Hello and welcome to All Things Apostolic. My name is Casey Sees.
And I'm Brian Williams, and we are joined here today with an amazing church planter named Marshall Clack. And we're so excited that he is here with us today. And so we want to just start things out and talk a little bit about your background, Brother Clack, as a church planter. I want you to just kind of start from the beginning there and tell us your experience planting churches.
So thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. I started our first church in Lawrenceville, Georgia, when I was 27. I was going to be running about 500 in probably a year. I had all of the zeal and the vision and the ready to take over the world. Didn't realize now, looking back at 50 years old now, I look back and realize I had no idea what I was doing. Just out there doing the best we could with what we had to work with. And the way that first church got started was with a backslider. Once we had decided to move to Lawrenceville and start a church, a lady in our home church said that her son lived there and he had been out of church for a long time and wanted me to try to contact him. So I contacted him. He was a manager of like an extended stay America type motel and set up a Bible study. When the day came to go teach the Bible study with him and his wife, he contacted me and asked me if he had some staff that wanted to sit in, could they sit in? And I said, sure, absolutely. So we show up to this hotel room, an extended stay America type deal, and there's 13 people. They're spread out through the whole room. They're sitting on the bed. They're the vanity over by the TV on the floor. They were everywhere. I sat in the corner with the lamp and my Bible and taught a Bible study. That's how we got started in Lawrenceville. We were there for 8 years. And then we transitioned out. In those 8 years, we saw, we bumped 100 often, and saw God do some great things. We baptized all 13 people within the first month. We got to use Bishop Tim Copeland's baptistry. It was broken. There was just nothing but cold water. And I remember baptizing 13 people and not feeling my feet when we were done. They were like frozen. But just memories like that. We started in a hotel meeting room at the Holiday Inn Express off of one of the main highways. It would seat like 29, 28 people. We lasted there probably 6 months or more, somewhere in that time frame. And then we were able to get a 1,400 square foot, just a straight long building with a bathroom and a foyer and one Sunday school room and then the sanctuary. When we filled it up to 80 plus people, and there were people stand. By the time we left, there were people who would just stand along the wall all the way to the back, well, to the front door, and kind of look around the side wall to see what was going on. Those were fun days. Man, I look back now and I've actually got the original church sign. My son and my wife went to Lawrenceville and this was a few months back and rode by and talked to, there was a music store beside us and he never took our sign down. like ever. It's been setting up for all these years. and people just think, I guess we're still there. They asked if they can have it and he gave it to us. And so it's in my garage now. When I drive in my garage, I've got Revival Center, big old church sign sitting in my garage. It's pretty fun to look at and have those memories come back.
Okay, so I want to stop you there. I think it's great. This is awesome. But you're church planting, we're church planting, we're trying to talk to people who are church planters, and you said a lot of stuff just now. You said, we filled the building up. Okay. Now that is, I know there's a lot that goes into that right there. So
church planters.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So I know it's not as simple as, you know, we just filled the building up. So, you're a musician. I'm a musician. So
I'm not.
Okay. He's not. But so you went into what did you do? Like when your services, you know, you just taught Bible study. Did you, how did you do music? What did you do there in the beginning there?
So, obviously my wife is also musically inclined. And so what we would do is she would play the keys. I would sing with her, and we were doing the cool screen, with a, you remember the overhead projectors?
Yeah.
I was the original, screen guy for our church, and we literally have the words printed out on that flimsy, clear stuff. And I would change the words out for the next song. And a matter of fact, in the hotel room, I would hold my then baby daughter and lead worship with one hand, hold her with the other. My wife would play. We would harmonize. I'd sing tenor. She'd sing lead. And we just, one thing that I've always done and I've always pushed in our church, wherever we were, and I tell to every church planter that I can tell, is act bigger than you are. Mm. If you go into it thinking, well, there's only 14 people here, and they can't, none of them sing, and it really doesn't matter. And you just kind of give a little bit and just get by. If you're giving, just get by kind of church, that's what kind of church you're going to have.
Right.
If you raise the bar and do everything you do with excellence, then you're going to end up having a church that has a culture that really believes we can do this. And so our singing would be done to the best of our ability, and we would teach them the songs. We would teach Bible studies. We'd go in people's homes. We would have it at coffee shops. One mode of evangelism that I just have seen work, and it's, I'm going to be the guy that's going to say, we never really knocked a whole lot of doors. Now, me and my wife in Lawrenceville, we did the mailbox ministry. I had like permanent indention on my thumb from thumbtacks, from going through neighborhoods and putting thumbtacks on mailboxes because it was legal to do that. We did that.
Have you got any illegal soul winning methods?
You know, man, not that I know of. I've tried my best to do it all legal, and I certainly never proselyted. We didn't take other people's saying pipe bomb. There it went. Boom sound now. We did our best to do everything legal and ethical.
Okay. And,
one thing.
There's a difference there, isn't
there? There is a difference. I try to push personal evangelism, influence friends, family, coworkers, neighbors, people that you know. And that is really how we built the church. And
so in the beginning, you're not door knocking, it is personal evangelism. So a lot of times that is very much on you in the very beginning.
Yes.
And then I'm guessing you at some point had to create some kind of culture within your group of leaders to become that. But in the very beginning, it's very much on you.
It is. It's people that you know. I used, you know, living there and having worked in that area when I was much younger, in my late teens, you know, 16, 17, 18, I worked at Walmart and I met a lot of people at Walmart, coworkers and stuff. So that when I went to Lawrenceville, I of course went back to Walmart and would shop where I used to work and tell coworkers that still knew who I was, you know, hey, look, we're starting a church. And we had, we had three or four families in our church that came out of Walmart because I knew them. I worked with them.
Right.
And they knew who I was and they came and they stuck and they stayed and they got the Holy Ghost and we baptized them. And most of them, were still, plugged in, you know, towards the end there. Now once I left, of course I had no control over anything that happened, but, a lot of it was just people that I knew that I would talk to, personal evangelism, influence people and then they would do the same thing. They would bring, you know, their cousin or their brother or their mom or their dad.
So I'm trying to figure this out right now where I'm at right now. I've only been there a few months in Shingle Springs, and I've had some success in getting people to come to church for different reasons. We have different stuff that's happened.
Yeah.
But there is a sticking point that I'm having. Maybe you can help me with this. And that is getting people to come back again and again and again. Okay. So can you talk about what did you do to get them to come back, give you that second look and keep coming?
I'm honest. Probably to a fault sometimes. I try to keep things real. That's just kind of how I'm wired. I'm going to tell you guys that at 50 years old on my second church plant and have been here in October for 13 years, in the 21 years of pastoring, it is harder today to get people to come back than it was 20 years ago.
What?
Period. Every church, every area, every city, every culture has its own unique variables. Obviously, here in the South, you would think that in the South, being that good old Bible Belt, that it wouldn't be hard to get people to come to church. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter that I'm in the Bible Belt. If we could have in this church that I'm in right now, the second church I planted, if we could keep everybody that's come through our doors, we would be a mega church, period. But it is hard. And I guess what I'm getting around to is I don't have the answer to that question. It's the same question I have right now. and I've been here for 13 years and people will come. They love it.
Yeah.
And this is
my church.
This is awesome. Yeah. Man, where have you been all my life? And you never see them again.
Right.
I don't know. I do have a theory. And it's just, it's post-Christianity world we live in. Now, and at the same time with our current events,
right,
that's just happened. Yeah. There's been an awakening of sort. Yeah. I don't know how old you guys would have been, but back in the 90s when we were in the Gulf War, there was an awakening. We were at war, and people were going to church again.
Yeah.
Once that died down, you know, it kind of went back to the normal. I would pray that it doesn't happen that way, but with people being people and being a realist about it, what are the what are the odds that this awakening after this recent assassination of Charlie Kirk, how long is that wave gonna last?
Right.
If we can, Lord, this sounds bad when you say it out loud, but if we can capitalize off of that, then that's great. But how long is it gonna last? You get people to come. What is the secret? I don't know the secret. I'm still trying to figure that out. And that's just being honest. To me, what I feel like is the number one key to people coming back is it's the level of their own personal hunger. Because, man, I'm in Atlanta at Metro. There are mega churches everywhere. You guys, you're in California. Yeah. There's mega churches everywhere.
Yeah.
There is a drive to go to the larger church.
Yeah.
That just is what it is. We can fight it. We can argue about it and debate it, but you're not going to change the statistics that state there are more. And I just read this yesterday when I was getting ready for today. There are more churches that are average size than there are mega churches by a landslide.
Yeah.
But more people prefer to go to a larger church.
Yeah.
Do you know what the median average church is right now in America? We've said 75, and we've been saying 75 because that used to be what it was. It's 60 right now.
Wow.
60 is the average size church in America. So you look at all of these churches that are starting like you guys are starting. When you guys start hitting the 40, 50, 60 mark, you're already an average size church in America.
Right.
Now, a lot of churches would stop there, but the parable in Luke 14, where Jesus says, gets the excuses and says, no, go out again. Gets the excuses, no, go out again that my house be filled. That's what keeps us pushing. Pushing, trying to find the answer to how do I get them back again? I've got a couple right now that are coming. They've come every Sunday for the last month. They think that I'm Trinitarian and still a part of the Church of God because I told them I came out of that.
Yeah.
Bro, I'm telling you, Ben Rodriguez preached here last week, and he preached oneness upside down the other, and they came back yesterday. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe they're really hungry. But what they keep saying is we cannot find this kind of church anywhere.
Yeah.
So that goes back to you making your service what it's going to be. And creating that culture from day one. It doesn't matter if you have 13 or if you have 30 or when you finally hit 60. If you preach when you've got 7, like they're 70, then when you hit 70, you're going to already have been preaching that way.
Yeah.
And so you are creating the culture. It does fall on the shoulders of the planter to create the culture in which that church is going to eventually become. And I'm saying a lot, and I know I'm
kind of
tracks, but there's another problem that comes in with creating the culture, and that is people like me that are wired, give me revival now, let's go. I want it yesterday. We should have been running 500, 20 years ago. It takes time.
Right.
And you guys are out there with the Rock Church, for example. You guys can look at your church plants. You can look at the Rock Church, and all of a sudden you can start comparing, like, man, how do we get from 30 to 1,000? How do we do that? It takes years. Church planners, we go in full of zeal and we're ready to change the world. But a lot of times we're not prepared for how long it's going to take.
Yeah.
To really get to that place where you look back and say, yeah, man, we've done this. We've gone from 30 to 150 in X amount of time. Man, we're pushing 200 in an X amount of time. But it takes time. And there's a lot of guys that get discouraged because culture takes longer to build than just the vision you have of what it can become.
Yeah. I'm glad you circled back and tied them together, because as you were speaking to Brian's question regarding, you know, how do you keep people, what kept going through my mind is what you had stated about having 13 people, right? And so a lot of it rides on the mindset of the individual. And so when you've got 13, you've got to have a mindset, hey, God's given me a vision for this and I know what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then when you've got enough come through your doors to be the size of a mega church,
yeah,
but you're not a mega church, you have to stay in your mind, I know what God showed me for this and I'm going to keep pushing until I see it come to fruition. And so it really, I mean, the mindset can't be overstated, right? It's, I remember hearing of a guy in Pennsylvania when he had started the church in Lancaster, Elder Brother Parrish in that area. He started his services in a YMCA. And when he went in the first, I don't know what it was, month or so that he had services there, it was him and his wife. No one else was there. Yeah. And they said he'd get up there and preach like the building was full. And the one day when he's preaching, there's a janitor in the YMCA outside the gymnasium door mopping the floor. And he came inside because he heard the guy preaching as if he was preaching to an entire auditorium. Wow. And that guy ended up being part of the church. And it's the mindset of, hey, if it's me and my wife, or if it's me and 500, I'm not going to change the way I preach. Mm-hmm. I'm going to preach as if it's a full room no matter what.
Right.
And that's contagious. When a leader is able, that now the hard part, like you're saying, is, at least for me, I'm wired the same way as you, right? I've been there a year and a half and we've got about 65 and I'm just beating my head off the wall like, let's go. Yeah. But to your point, we're already the size of an average church.
Right.
Now I don't want to be average my whole life. I want to be above average, right?
Right.
But the hard part sometimes is maintaining that mindset over the years. And so it's easy to have it in the beginning. It may cycle down a little bit. It comes back. But what do you personally do to keep that mindset and that drive? How long ago did you plant the church you're at right now?
13 years.
So what do you do to keep that mindset over a 13-year period? Now, I'm sure there's ups and downs where you're in the back room hitting your head off the wall, but you don't let the congregation obviously see that. But how do you maintain that sort of drive and that sort of mindset for that period of time?
So now you start talking about illegal and legal things. Now we have a problem. So as I've gotten older, and I know 50 doesn't seem old when you compare it to 70, but 50 is old when you compare it to 20 and 30. And at 50, I have learned to be more patient with the process. There is a process with the planting a church, and the one thing that is impossible to do and be effective is to attempt to circumvent that process. Mm-hmm. And there is going to be addition and subtraction.
Right.
For years, I struggled with the subtraction because I took it personally.
Right.
And that's the way I'm wired.
Right.
I go all in. I'm either all in or I'm not going to do it. And so as a church planter, when you are going all in with these families that you have, and you're pouring your heart, you're pouring your soul, you're instructing, you're preaching, you're dedicating babies, you're going to birthday parties, you're doing all this stuff, and then the subtraction hits. Woo! When the numbers are climbing, we feel successful.
Yeah.
When the numbers are sliding, we feel like we're a loser. And mm-hmm. what have we done wrong? I'm trying to answer your question and not sound anti-spiritual, but there are a lot of pastors, church planters, that are beating their head against the wall every Monday. They've got their resignation letter in the computer. All they have to do is change the date.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's be real. I'm the real guy, so I'm just going to keep it real. They don't know they're going to make it another month. Part of it is the mindset that we go into church planning with the war of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
We're just wired this way. In the world, most men, when they meet, what's the first question they typically ask? Hey, man, what do you do?
Yeah.
Because what we do determines and defines, number one, who we are, and number two, how they're going to respond to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you go to a church planner, are any preacher, think about typically the question. I was going to ask you this earlier.
Right. How many are you?
How many people are you running already?
Yeah.
That's humanity. We, us men, define ourselves based off of our numbers. Right. Now, what happens, God forbid, what happens 2-3 months from now, you lose, 10 people for whatever reason. And then it's like, man. We were there. We're supposed to be going to the addition side, but I just lost them because they got offended. They got whatever. Or they moved. Their job moved them. It don't always have to be a bad story. Right. It's just life. They grandkids were born and they moved to be with grandkids.
Right.
It's one of those things that the numbers game is a curse to a church planner's mindset. And we have this idea because we go to conferences where there's hundreds to thousands of people and we feel good. I remember in my first church, especially going to a church conference and coming home more depressed than I was before I left. Because I'm coming home and I'm thinking about all the stuff I just saw that I don't have.
Yeah.
I don't have the people. I don't have the resources. I don't have the building. I have a hotel meeting room, brother.
Yeah.
You can only do so much. But what I've always tried to do is once I've gotten over the depression, is kind of think about what I liked and how I could scale it.
Right.
How do I get, okay, I can't afford a big sign on the road. I'm in a hotel. What can I do? Well, I can buy a nice A-frame sign that's two-sided. I can spend the money. It costs money. And we can put colorful graphics of our church meets here at 2 p.m. And we can put it out there and we can find out what the codes are. Because the code here, we have signs. Our church right now, we are literally, when I say literally, we are literally in the back of a neighborhood. Mm. Straight up. There's no sign on the side of the road. There's no, you can't see this church from any of the major, and it's off of a major highway, but you don't know it's there until Friday. We put our signs out about 2 o'clock and we take them up Sunday after church. Now, by law, we can put them out on Friday and take them up by Monday morning. So we put them out on Friday. We take them up on Sunday. Then what we did was we went through the neighborhood, and there's just a very simple way to get to our neighborhood. Take the first street, to the dead end, hang a right, dead end, churches on the right. So we went and bought yard signs and put arrows that when people come into the neighborhood, because if I was going to this church and I had never been to it and I'm going in the back of a neighborhood, I mean, that's kind of, it's kind of weird. I mean, mm-hmm. Let's be real. I mean, what in the world have I gotten myself into? So we've tried to make things colorful. We have banners. We've spent money. We've spent money to make ourselves look bigger than we are.
Thank you for joining us on this week's episode of All Things Apostolic. The discussion was so good. We went over our time. We look forward to seeing you next week for part 2.